to the podcast. My name is Gavin Harvey, and I'm one of the co-hosts for this project. And we're going to talk about a controversial topic in our broadcast. But while during the class, we were discussing a few social theorists who made contributions to academia, as well as the social science field of sociology. And the two individuals we focus on and what we're going to talk about today is Frantz Fanon and Ida B. Wells Barnett. But before I get into their backgrounds, let me just explain why they were very important to our theme of discussion. Fanon and Wells Barnett expressed their ideas coming from a black perspective, as each individual experienced racial discrimination in the United States as well as abroad, even in France and Algeria. Fanon's work entitled A Black Skin, White Mask, you know, something very deep in thought, explores the psychosis of being black but not being able to be fully present in that space due to having to capitulate to white comfort. And Wells Barnett's work, Southern Horrors, Lynch Law in All Its Phases, discusses the accounts of how black men were lynched for having intimate affairs with white women and how in some cases white women were lying black men to say that they were raped in order to appear innocent. These, among other details, were far too explicit for me to name, but what remains evident in this particular case is that Fanon and Wells Barnett's point of view gave an account of racial divide happening the world over. Due to the white power structure, whether it's called by the name of colonialism or chattel slavery or Jim Crow, etc., etc. So with Wells Barnett, which I'm going to focus on real quick, the theories I wanted to really focus on were two. It was racial intimidation through lynching, as well as racial bias through legality. Wells Barnett argued that lynching was a form of intimidation for black people to kind of stay in their place. And during that time, blacks were recently freed through the 13th Amendment, but the culture of oppression prevailed due to the attitudes of the Southern planters, as well as the subtle Northern folks who really didn't truly see blacks as equal citizens in the United States. And during the Reconstruction period, whites would try to find any reason to persecute blacks, thus the Jim Crow era was established to perpetuate the separate and unequal lifestyle in America. And lynching was just a way for blacks to be terrified of their white counterparts. So Wells Barnett even had to run from her home in Memphis, Tennessee to move up north to start a mission as a journalist and to write about the atrocities going on in the South, essentially all over the country, though. And from the book Southern Horrors, Wells Barnett makes it clear of the double standard that exists in white society by saying, and I quote, "A white woman's word was taken as absolutely in this case, as when the cry of rape was made, he was free." She was talking about a white man being free. So even in law, there was no profound justice to be served for blacks because in almost all cases during that time, blacks were marginalized and neglected nonetheless. Now, this is just a synopsis of what I learned from the research, but obviously we have more data to report. But in order for us to gain proper insight on the task we had to complete, we did some other interviews from outside entities to provide their opinions on the social theories as well as their thoughts on some questions we provided in the interview session. And what stuck out to me, well, really what stuck out to me the most was the variations in the responses. I interviewed a friend of mine, a Haitian dude, Haitian American, brother from Miami, and he had some strong convictions on some of the questions that I had asked him. Originally, he heard of Ida B. Wells Barnett, but not so much Fran Fanon, and I know why, because Fanon was originally from the West Indies, and he spent a lot of time in France and Algeria, while Wells was born in the United States under slavery, so the story circulated differently. And basically what he said that our mission should be focusing on economics and infiltration of industries, because that would be the only way to survive as a people in the long run. And I interviewed another young lady, another African-American lady friend of mine from Memphis, Tennessee, by all places, but living in Tampa. And now, you know, she had similar sentiments, but also a different perspective. She explained that our mission should be to have a code of conduct and that we live by in order to repair our damaged relationships with one another as a people, because without that, we can't focus on economics and infiltration. So basically, all this ties into our social theories and how they describe their worldview from the experience. So to further expound on my interpretation of Wells Barnett, I wanted to ask Shaquille to the conversation for more in-depth analysis. Shaquille?
Thanks, Gavin. Hi, everyone. And again, welcome to our podcast. My name is Shaquille Davis, and I'm also one of the co-hosts of this project on Ida B. Wells Barnett and Frantz Fanon. I will be giving you a brief analysis on Ms. Wells Barnett, who she is, and the great things that she's contributed to sociology. I will also share some insights from our participant observation interviews on the theories of Ms. Wells Barnett and how her theories apply in today's society. Known formally as Ida B. Wells, she was born in Mississippi during one of the most horrible and unforgettable times in history, slavery. Shortly after her birth in 1862, the Civil War between the North and the South had come to a close, with the North, or the Union States as they were called, as the victors. President Abraham Lincoln then issued the Emancipation Proclamation at the beginning of 1863, which freed the slaves of the South, or the Confederate States as they were called. Wells and her family then went on to live their lives as freed slaves in Memphis, Tennessee. In her later years, Wells grew a passion for investigative journalism, as she was then living in a nation full of hatred. Negro Americans, as we were called back then, were being falsely accused of crimes and also lynched or murdered for no reason. She co-owned the newspaper Memphis Free Speech and Headlight, which gave Wells Barnett the opportunity to publicly express her views on the racial issues, and that she did. With all of the racial segregation and inequality going on in the South, this led Wells to further fight against the cruelty and other injustices that were done against Negro Americans. This motivated Wells to then publish her first book titled Southern Horrors. In the book, Wells investigated the lynching of innocent Negro Americans, as white Americans were said to only use this practice against black criminals. Further investigating into this matter and brought to light that whites were not only using this for criminals, but using lynching as a tactic to further oppress black people, or as Gavin said, to keep them in their place. Continuing to fight against these injustices, Wells went on to publish another book titled The Red Record. In this book, Wells Barnett continued her investigative journalism into the South as Negro Americans were continuing to be killed mercilessly for reasons unknown. She this time took it a step further by gathering the names, ages, and death years of those murdered and how they were murdered. There's also a chapter in the book that gives the statistics of how many people were murdered between the years 1892 through 1894, as the book revolved around those 3 years. So Ms. Wells Barnett was very in your face about everything. So she wanted everyone to understand that this is happening to us. Why is this happening to us? Why is everyone turning a blind eye to this, as if this is something that just happens, that's supposed to happen, basically? And it's not. You know, we as black people are being treated unfairly, and we gained our rights through the Emancipation Proclamation, which gave us our citizenship in the United States. So why aren't we being treated as our counterparts, which would be the white people? So I interviewed two of my close friends, Mary Simmons of Atlanta, Georgia, and Shane Coker of Miami, Florida. Ms. Simmons, she's a clinical director for a rehabilitation center, and Shane Coker, he is a financial analyst. So each of them shared their thoughts on what they thought racism meant to them, and if they felt that African Americans were being dehumanized in the past, and is that same dehumanization being carried out in present time? Mary defined racism as just ignorance, before further deconstructing the term as bias. Shane defined racism as the oppressor and the oppressed, and listing it as a power dynamic, with the oppressor having the power over the oppressed. They both agree that dehumanization of African Americans in the past is still being carried out in the present, but it isn't as in your face now as it was back then, with a lot of it being hidden from the public eye. Police brutality is just as well alive today as it was back then, as well as the innocent killing of African Americans. These were and are the very injustices that Wells Barnett risked her life to stand up against. So in closing, Miss Ida B. Wells Barnett, she fought very hard for the rights of many African Americans. And without her contributions, we probably wouldn't have majority of the rights that we have today. She was brave, she was smart, and she went out on a limb for the sake of all African Americans. And I believe that her being marginalized is definitely something that we should look into, and definitely bring her work and everything that she's done to the public eye. I will now give my partner Santiago the floor, as he will give a further insight on the life of Frantz Fanon and his contributions to sociology. Santiago.
Thank you for that introduction, Gavin, and thank you, Shaquille, for your analysis of Ida B. Wells, her work, and how they continue to affect our social lives today. My name is Santiago, and what we're going to do for this very last part of our broadcast is we're going to focus on our second marginalized theorist. This theorist's name is Frantz Fanon, and he focused on post-colonialism. Most specifically, he focused on the relationship and the dynamic between the colonizer, the colonized, and how this dynamic not only affected the people during that time, but continues to affect our relationships and interactions to this very day. He applied a psychoanalytical lens to his sociological work because he was a psychiatrist by trade. So what he did is, instead of just focusing on racism and how that created a power structure in and of itself, he looked at how racism was just one factor, and how location, time, race, ethnicity, age, social status, and income all came into play and created different and intricate power structures in each social interaction. He also focused on how the period of colonialism and its results, which vary depending on the country and region, created lasting psychological effects not only on the people that were directly subjugated, not only on those who directly colonized, but on the people who were simply affected by being surrounded by colonialism. So just as an example, he looked at how your ordinary French or Algerian citizen would have been affected by the French colonization of Algeria and the Algerian Revolution, despite the fact that they may not have had any direct impact or involvement in either of those. Having looked at his work, I took my participant observation and tried to apply a lens that was similar to his, and actually found that his findings and his writings were very true. I found what may now seem, with the benefit of hindsight, very obvious, a very strong parallel to the colonized and colonizer relationship when you analyze any sort of store or mall and you look at the dynamic between the shopper and the seller, and where there is a certain locus of power in the seller's hands that will always be higher than the power that the buyer can command, and how these two will interplay that power in order to come out winning something, but there will always be a loss bigger in the hands of the buyer than of the seller. The other dynamic I noticed was that in medical waiting rooms, the receptionists hold the power, like the colonizers, over the patients who could represent the colonizees. But the other interesting thing was that there was a power structure within the patients themselves outside of the receptionist, in which age was actually the biggest determinant of how much power that person held. The oldest and youngest patients had the highest amount of power, while those who fell in between were actually on the margins, and because of that, they psychologically marginalized themselves physically by sitting away from the receptionist desks. In my interviews with two former co-workers and still friends, we kind of noticed how colonialism continues to affect our lives. One of them's name was Omar, and his father is Egyptian, who is a historically colonized peoples, while his mother is a Spaniard, who is a historically colonizer people. And he was able to actually realize how this tension of colonized and colonizer actually played into his upbringing, and the different perspectives and unique perspectives that each of his parents had, and how now he is trying to show his daughter the two different sides of where he comes from in a way that does not create conflict, but instead kind of brings some sort of harmony and bridges the gap between the two. My other interviewer was Steven, who is a Cuban American, his parents being from Cuba. He was born here, so his upbringing was very different. And with him, we realized that what Fanon said, that these power structures will continue to change, that they are never really static, they're always in motion. We realized that this is true, and we looked at how Latin America, since we're both Hispanics, how this actually provides a very great example. Originally, you have your Spanish conquistadors and your natives, and when the Spanish came, the natives were placed at the bottom of the hierarchy, with the Spanish holding all the power. But as time continued to progress, and as the Spanish continued to settle in Latin America, or what became Latin America, there was a third group of people that was born, and this was the Hispanics, who were half European, half Native American, which meant that they were higher than the natives in their privilege and power and status, but they were lower than the European because they were still a half-breed. So in this, you can see how Fanon was right in saying that these structures, past the point of colonialism, will continue to affect because they're ever-changing and they depend on a numerous amount of factors that is not just down to race, and they will continue to affect our social interactions regardless of how mundane they are. Now, this last analysis does bring us to the end of our podcast that focused on Ida B. Wells and Frantz Fanon, two overlooked social theorists whose work can pose serious challenges to the sociological canon. We sincerely hope that our analysis of these two theorists and their revolutionary work will inspire you to look at social phenomena that could be considered common in new and unorthodox ways. From Gavin, Shaquille, and myself, we thank you very much for listening.